Okay, we're starting at the top of the family house. Shalu Tamidavit Rav Rabbi Gamliel. Mahu legadel. What is it? Are you allowed to bring up these behemoth tafot in Eretz Yisrael? Says Amalem Mutar. Says no problem. Vatnam. Our Mishnah says explicitly, Eim Gadli behemoth akav Eretz Yisrael. So what do you mean Mutar? El hafu kabau mine. This is what they asked him. Mahu leshahot. Can you keep around these animals? Amalem Mutar. Sure, you can keep behemoth akot around as long as you don't allow them to go and graze outside. I mean that if you obviate the need for us to worry about the problem, which is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that they're going to go out and eat and then also get involved or with other people's fields, so then if you eliminate that problem by having it tied to your bed and not letting it go outside, then that's fine. You can have a behemoth daka in Eretz Yisrael. Tan Rabbanan, matzeh b'chassid echad she'agoneach milibo. This is chassid who had a ke'ev lev. He had some sort of heartache or heart pain. Shalu l'rofim, they checked him with the doctors. They're like, no, takanat she'enek chalav roteach mishachrit l'shachrit. He needs to have, I guess, freshly milked milk. You know, fresh milk that is boiled, you know, each morning. Right? From one day to the next. They brought him a goat, so they could have goat's milk each morning. It's like Rabbi Gamliel suggests, and they tied it to the post to the bed. And you used to basically use it. Milk to take it straight. Sounds like from the aid, from morning to morning. After a while, his friends came in to visit him. They saw this goat that was tied to the bedposts. They were shocked. They stepped back. They couldn't believe that he had an AIDS here. There are these armed robbers in his house. Referring to the animal because it's ro'eb tzeos acharim. Because it grazes in other people's fields. But since it grazes in other people's fields, it must be a thief. There's something wrong. That's it. We're going to visit him. How can we visit this? This guy can't be for real. They checked up on him. You know, they looked through his resume. They checked up on him. And they found out that he had no other sins. Nothing else wrong.
Right.
They cleared everything. So there's no sin besides this age, bringing up a behemoth daka in Eretz Yisrael. Va'apu b'shat mitato. Now to him, on his deathbed, you know, at the moment of his death, I don't know if it sounds like Marsha, he was saying vidui. Amar yudeani, she'en bi avon, elo avon otai, she'avarti adivrei chaverai. Says that the only sin that I had was this sin of this age, of this goat, that I violated the word of my friends. In that I kept the behemoth daka in Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact, which is unclear, the Marsha leaves the Tzarachim sad because, well, one is pikuach nefesh, and number two is even choleh. Forgetting about even if it wasn't pikuach nefesh, even if it's a choleh she'en bo sakana.
He's going to tie it to the bed.
Right, and Rabbi Gamliel's story right beforehand, which says that if you tie it to the bed, it's okay. So he was the same mitzvah. Rabbi Gamliel that he tied to the bed. Number two is even if he's a choleh she'en bo sakana, he's entitled to. You know, at least we wave the Rabbanon for Cholish Shein Bo Sakana. Here's a din de Rabbanon. You can wave it for a Cholish Shein Bo Sakana. Nevertheless, he felt uncomfortable that he had to violate a din de Rabbanon in order to solve his medical issues. All right. Amar Bishmal, mi balei batim shi begalil alyom, hayu pimirit abo. My family was from the Balabatim up in the upper Galilee. And why were they destroyed? What happened to them? Why was their whole area or their neighborhoods or their yeshuv destroyed? They used to let their animals graze in the forest. And they used to do din momo and v'yachid, which is a sign of a form of gat ruach. It's supposed to be din momo and v'shalosh or v'shalosha, and not v'yachid. Right, so what's the problem? They let them graze in the forest. That's exactly what we want. Right, our Mishnah gave that exception, which is that Eim Gadlin You're allowed to bring them up. You're allowed to let them graze in the forest. Those are areas that are hefker in general, and the owners of the forest are generally mochel on this type of item, that there is no gezel. It's one of the takanot Yoshua, that people would not be makpid, that people take right from a hefker field that allow their animals to graze in such an area. So what was wrong? So between their house and the forest, there was a small field, and they used to pass through that small field on the way to the forest. So, I don't know if there could be two issues. One issue is that they allowed the animals to graze on the way to the forest in this other person's field, or the other problem is that they made a shortcut through someone else's property, and they trampled through this person's property in order to get to the forest, and because of that, he says that they were destroyed. Now, Tana Rabban, Ro'esh Asa Tshuva. Ro'esh wants to come and do Tshuva. Ein Mechayvin told him Mekor Miyad. They don't say to him, sell everything right away, right? We said before, you're not allowed to bring up a Beim Ataka and Eretz Yisrael. So here's a Ro'esh. He wants to do Tshuva. He wants to say, listen, I'll listen to the Chachamim. I'm not going to bring up a Beim Atakot. We don't say to him, he's got to sell everything on the spot, right? Because that would, in a sense, it's like Tanakat Meirish. It would prevent the person from doing Tshuva because he'd have to take a fire sale price. And he wouldn't be willing to sell the animals. El mocher al-yad al-yad. Right, he sells it piecemeal. I mean, he sells it as it comes along, and is able to liquidate. Right. You can liquidate. As he goes through, you can liquidate his holdings of sheep or goats or whatever it is that he's raising over here. And he can sell them off. So we allow both the dispensation to promote tshuva, right, in one sense, and also right, not to cause an undue loss to this individual. B'chein ger, so a klavim v'chazirim b'shuto. So ger, because obviously it's not a Jew who's bringing up these chazirim and these klavim, right? Ein mechayvin otol mekor miyad. We don't force him to sell it right away. Mokher al yad al yad. He sells it piecemeal. Excuse me again, so that he doesn't have to take a huge loss on it, that he can realize the value of what he has received. So let him sell it off. Mechayim mishin adar likach b'bayit likach isha b'eretz Yisrael. Person takes the neder to make aliyah and to take a wife from Eretz Yisrael. There's a mitzvah not only to build a house in Eretz Yisrael, but also to take a wife in Eretz Yisrael.
I don't think. What?
That was his nether. I was saying, but why would he take a nether? So the kach bayit lekachisha Eretz Yisrael. All right, I know it's not made for this individual, but he says take a bayit and nisha in Eretz Yisrael. So ain mechayvin otol lekach miyad. Don't say to him, take the first woman that you've been doing Eretz Yisrael, first house you see, you have to buy. You find a house that's appropriate for you, and you find a woman that's appropriate for you. Meaning that it's not something where it's pressing that you must solve the issue right away. So we have a ma'aseh b'ishachat. There's a case with this woman. She had b'na mitzarla. Her child was giving her a hard time. He was a teenager. V'kapsav nishba'a. She takes the shvu'ah. Kol mish yavo. Eni machzirato. Says, anybody who comes and takes him, I won't take him back. In that she basically made him hefker. Anybody to take? Sure enough, we come to Allah ibn Adam. Some guy showed up and said, alright, we'll take him. But they were not necessarily the right type of people to bring up this young man. The idea was that she wanted to be brought up by proper, you know, parenting in a proper environment. This is not what she intended when she took the shvu'ah. So she can reverse. I mean, she can wait till the appropriate people come by, or the right adoptive or foster parents come along. Alright. Anyway, so now what's important here also is that the Tosfos points out, it's not here, but in the previous Amud, Tosfos points out that when we say that you're not allowed to bring up a Behema Daka, he said that even in your house, right? Because if it's out grazing, he says that even Behemoth Gatzot are not allowed. Because when it comes to a Behema Daka, when it comes to Behemoth Daka, you can't even bring it up inside of your house. And some of his proofs over here are Gemara that we just read. Because over here we just said that one of the things when you're doing tshuva over here to not bring up Behemoth Dakot anymore, we say to him that he has to liquidate his flock. Right? He has to liquidate his flock, number one, and number two is we let him do it over time. Now, if you are allowed to either bring up Behemoth Dakot in your house, or Tosfos offers another prayer, but if someone else was allowed to do it, you can't do it, but you can hand it over to a Re'eh to do it on your behalf. He says then that would have been a better solution. While the guy's doing tshuva, let him bring it into the house. Or let him give it over to another ro'eh. But you see from here that that's not the solution. The only solution to when you do tshuva is actually to liquidate the flock. So Tosfos brings the proof from here that, in all these instances, right, in all these instances you see that it's a problem for behemoth that guy in Eretz Yisrael, and that the only solution is not to do it at all, right, to prevent it, to do it at all.
And this is a good protein in the
Then Marsha asked the question. He says he doesn't know how to explain it. The only thing he could answer is this Maseva Chassid Echad. He was a Chassid. And people would would learn from him what to do. We say in general that we hold the higher standard because people follow him. And even though he tied it to his bed, but people see him bringing up a Behemah Dakah. Shem Shamru, Hey Megadim Behemah Dakah, Kachmu, Hey Megadim Chaya Dakah. Just like they said, you're not Megadel Behemah Dakot in Eretz Yisrael, you also can't bring up Chayot Dakot. You can't bring up non-domesticated Behemoth Dakot. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Megadim Kelavim Kofrim, V'chatulim V'kofin V'chudot Naid. And they should seem to not care at the bayit. They're allowed to bring up these dogs, these village, village dogs. I should bring two interpretations of what they are. Either they are Ktanim V'nanasimheim, they're very small dogs. Right, tiny dogs, so they're not going to be a danger to people. Right. They have a big bark, but they're not big. Right, so or the klavim gdolim shel tayadim, or otherwise the hunter dogs, the dogs that are used for hunting, that are not dangerous to humans. Like in this case, some sort of domesticated form of a dog that's not problematic for people. With chatulim, we said cats, with kupim, right? Those are we have monkeys or. Of sorts, but chudot tnaim, which we're going to discuss in a second, what exactly these are, right? Some sort of these tnaim is from snap, from the word snap, but from the
Hebrew.
Yeah, but here it means
push,
because they hadn't seen squirrels in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel.
Just today,
in Hebrew, tnaim is a squirrel. So the chudot tnaim is those from the snap, and the word snap from the bristles, the thorns. Right, that they grow up, the chudada comes from that area. We'll see what it is in a second. Why? Because they clear out the house from achbarit, and that they protect the house. They make sure that there's no mice that are going around in the house that are rodents that are causing problems that they bring in. That
chudot are rats in Hebrew.
Oh, today chudot, but it's in the Gemara. I think it's a weasel, right?
Yeah.
Lashon Gemara is a weasel. Right. So the Gemara says, "My chudot tnaim." What are these chudot tnaim? Yehuda shrata charta. They are a sheret that digs, and a sheret that digs down, that somehow burrows. Vigadam, right? Charta the dinei shakeg. Right. It's a animal that's a charta. Again, it's digging, this burrowing animal that has thin legs. Viraya bene vardine, and it's grazes, meaning, but that's where it feeds or it lives, between the vardine, which is the snet, meaning in these thorn bushes, or in these thickets. Umay shratza, and what is a sheret? What's the definition of a sheret? That its legs are very short, as short legs, as rodents, right? A rodent has very, very short legs. The way, the way the Gemara reads, the way if you just read it like this, it sounds like the Gemara parsed out this chudat nai, they said, right, they have a charto, right, they called it a shratza de charto. Then the Gemara says, oh, it's oror de charto de ktinesh shakei. And then the Gemara goes, what's a shratza versus a charto at ktinesh ane? Tosfos actually says that this is a halakhic question. A halakhic question is, what is classified as a sheret min haTorah? I mean, that the Torah says that there are different dinim when it comes to a sheret than versus when it comes to a regular animal that has nevela. If any animal dies and it's in the Vela, then it's mitamak in the Vela when it dies. The carcass is in the Vela. On the other hand, the sheretz, there are the Shmona Shratzim, right, but the other Shratzim do not have this din of the Vela. So the question is, what is qualified as a sheretz and what's not? So the Gemara says here, what is a sheretz? A sheretz is something that has very short legs. When it's rodent legs, these very short legs, then it is a sheretz. Well, now I'm asking the question about this chuda hasnai. This chudat nai had thin legs, but not necessarily short legs. Because of that, so it says that the Mishnah in Tyrus, mentions in Olot, Mishnah in Kilayim says that when it comes to a Chudas Na'id, that it's actually a Safek, whether it's a Din of Sheretz or a Din of Neveilah, because its legs are thin but not necessarily short. And that's what the Gemara is differentiating over here between what's classified as a clear Sheretz and what is this Chudas Na'id. Okay. Amar Rav Yudam Rav. Once they reached in Bavel became like Eretz Yisrael. We had similar statements in the Gemara in Gittin. Right? The Gemara in Gittin says that Asinu Bavel, Eretz Yisrael, like Gavei Gittin. When it comes to Gittin, we also made Bavel like Eretz Yisrael, which means that they were Bekiyam Lishma. And Bavel had the same status as Bekiyam Lishma. So those over here, they said, for Behemet Daka, Bavel classifies or is qualified like Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Adar Bar Abba, Rav Huna, Didach Mai. So Rav Adar Bar Abba says to Rav Huna, well, you live in Bavel. What are these behemoth dakot doing over here? What about your flocks of behemoth dakot? Says Amalai, Didan Kan Mitzra, Lu, Chova. Says, my wife, Chova, takes care of our flocks, make sure that they don't go out of our enclosed areas. Amalai, Chova, Tekvirinu, Lu, Bina. Says, Chova should bury her children. Kula Shane, the Rav Adar Bar Abba, okay, so one second, I'll explain it. Kula Shane, the Rav Adar Bar Abba, came, Zara, the Rav Huna, Mechova. All the years of Rav Adar Bar Abba, that Rav Huna never had any children from his wife, Chova. The way Rashi explains it, or the way it seems is, he says that you're relying on your wife, Chova, and she's unable to watch the name of that coach. She's not a proper Roah, and therefore, this is not a real Shmirah. So you're really violating the Takanat Chamim, that in Bavel there also should not be Behemot Dakot. And of course, Rashi sounds like it was a curse. It was a Kwela that he gave her that shouldn't be. Now, Tosfos brings down here as other interpretations. And the Rabbeinu Hananel, he says, explains it as a Bitnia. Says that it was a exclamation. Wait, your wife Chova is busy watching the sheep and not your children? I mean, it wasn't said in a derech of klala.
The same thing,
again,
the same kind of exchange.
In Nazir, right? The Tosaf mentions it right here. Very good.
It's the same
people, the same party.
It wasn't the same issue.
No, it was about the Hakamat Arosh of Ketanim.
Over
there. Because his day, Rav Huna's day in Nazir, is that you can have a person who's not a Bar Chiyuva be Makif Rosh for someone who is a Bar Chiyuva. So over there he says, who cuts your kids' payas? My wife, Chova, because she's not a Bar Chiyuva. So over there, again, Rav Adar says also that, right, that you shouldn't, she should bury her children. Now over there, the context makes more sense, because they're talking about the Ketanim, that she's doing a Maaseh on the Ketanim. What's different, that's what it says over here, over there, it's different as Rav Huna, the Shita Tei over there. That's the Shita that he believes, that a woman can cut the thing. Over here, what was Rav Huna's, he didn't really have a leg to stand on, because his Rebbe, we're going to see the second Rav, was the one who brought, or at the time of Rav, that was when the Takana came over. So that's what he says. So Tosus, if you look at Tosus here, Berach Rav, if you have a few dark, we'll go banal, which is second, because I know second, you don't stone. The Havi is a principle that we see from Shmuel in the Gemara in Tanit. Baba, Kshkirgiga, you'll say Mishnei HaShalit. It was as if, once he said it, it's as if it happened, meaning that there was a mistake. But sometimes when you say something, right, it's enough to make it happen. This is what Shaul was asking about. We have come to Rosh, you can't explain that. According to, for you, who gets your kids to it? There's clear that he's cursing her. She's not worried about bearing her son. It's not that it was a direct klala.
Indirect.
It wasn't exactly a bracha, but it wasn't as direct a klala. Right, so, and also you have to explain over here that the possibility that there was either Zev Zek Goreim or, you know, what exactly transpired between the two cases, because you have both of them being the curse. So which one was the one that took effect? Why did he twice that he cursed him? Or is it uncertain where the story was? I mean, that's the other possibility. The Gemara knew there was such a story. They didn't know what the case was in the exchange between Avarad and Rava and Ravuna. It's also a possibility. And therefore, in these two exchanges, they placed a situation, a circumstance onto these both cases. Right, so now, Marta Zika Damre, I'm Ravuna, I'm a Rav. So according to this lesson, it's much more pressing or strong, which is that Rav Huna said in the name of Rav, you know, it's Rav Bavel, Karet Zavel Bein Medaka. Right, so there, then, it's actually Rav Huna himself, who has the member from Rav, and then he's violating his, you know, Rav Huna has learned from Rav, and then he's not keeping it. So there would be much more sense that he's cursing him, for that item. Alright, now, Mechiata Rav Bavel, once Rav came to Bavel, right, that was when the Zerah or Sakana from Eretz Yisrael moved over to Bavel. So why is it when Rav came to Bavel it changed? The Rashi gives two interpretations over here. He says, Rabu mityashvin shem. Many Jews came there, mitnei yeshiva tov, because he established a yeshiva there. So many people came to settle around that area. And once it became rows of Jews, therefore it took on the status of Eretz Yisrael. Lishna Achrina, the Rashi offers, is that Huba v'lindein l'mdanu l'azer v'kach. And once Rav came, he came from Eretz Yisrael and taught us about this takana. And once he taught us about this takana, then we refrained or we stopped bringing up Eimut HaKol to Bavel. He was the one that brought that takana over to Bavel. Tosfos says, wait a minute, he says, I don't think this is the right interpretation, but he says, V'fresh Rabbeinu Tam Hatha, Mechiat HaRav of Bavel, V'horeh Banu, Shvimot Yichanea, V'acher Shemazker, Shekalu Bavel, Dina Liyot Keret Yisrael, Dikitin, Shvigim Lishma, Chen Kan, Linyin Beim HaDaka, Sheisham Rov Yisrael. Again, that the change in status of Bavel is once Rav came over there and taught us. Not that at the time of Rav, that's when it happened, but Rav came and taught us that the center of Judaism had moved. The center of Judaism had moved from Eretz Israel to Bavel. And what is that? That talks about the Galut. When we sent out the Gemara in Gittin also, when they sent the Galut, they sent the Masger and the Harishim. Then the Gemara interprets that the Masger and the Harishim are the Talmidei Chachamim. The great Chachamim were sent ahead. That was the Tova Kadosh Baruch Hu did. That in the earlier Galiot, before Galut Zidkiel was the destruction of Mikdash, he already sent a Melad of the Chachamim, so they were able to establish a Yeshiva and establish a Jewish presence, a strong Jewish presence in Bavel. So finally when the Mikdash is destroyed and they're sent into Galut, the people have somewhere to go, and there is a center of Judaism. And that's the point that Rav established. Rav established that Bavel then became a center of Judaism, and it takes on all the characteristics of what were the center of Judaism in Eretz Yisrael, included that Gittin Lishma, over here, the Takana of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but over there, it's the Takana of Bavel, Yishuv Bavel. Now this, again, this part of the Gemara seems to almost undermine what Rashi said on the Mishnah. Rashi said on the Mishnah, it's Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, right? So there seems to be like a particular issue with the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now Rashi also mentions, right, at that point, when he says, Mishum Bnei Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Behold, though there is still some of Israel. He also mentions as a secondary point, he makes up, because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and the role of those in Eretz Yisrael belong to Jews. Right? So, their possibility is that there's a din in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the Takana should only apply Eretz Yisrael, not in Bavel. The other thing I think what Rashi is also mentioning is that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael plus everywhere, all the fields there belong to Jews, and that's the problem, because you're going to have them laying your animals graze, and they're going to go take from Jewish fields and ruin the Jewish fields out there. And there actually says, whereas in Chutzlaret, alright, if they do some damage, you'll compensate for that damage. Yesterday we spoke about the possibility that, right, whether there's an Easter by Niske Mamon or not. And from Rashi, it seems like there is no Easter in Niske Mamon. But, according to this interpretation, right, you could differentiate between what it seems to be Jewish fields and non-Jewish fields, which is that.
It would be an Easter.
Right, possibly. By Jewish fields, the Easter applies both in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. Whereas by non-Jewish fields, it may not, there may be no Easter in Niske Mamon, even though you have to compensate for it. You have to recompense, you have to give them compensation for destroying or grazing in their field, but nevertheless, there may not be Easter in Niske Mamon, so don't worry about it until the robe of the area becomes Jewish. Once the robe of the area becomes Jewish, then we start to worry about the same problem we had in Eretz Yisrael. Although it still doesn't answer just the issue of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which Rashi makes a point of in the Mishnah. Okay, now, every case. Rav Ushmo v'Rav Atzi iklu l'bei Shavu Ahabein v'amilah l'bei Yishua Abein. So, Rav and Shmuel and Rav Atzi went to a Beit Shavua Abein. So, Beit Shavua Abein comes from the week old, right? Meaning that the child's week old to the Brit Milah. Right? He went to a Brit Milah of a Ben, and Rashi, right, says that Brit Milah. Right? No, next one. I would have interpreted that as the Shalom Zachar. The next one I was going to say that. V'imilah l'bei Yishua Abein. Rashi says, what's Bei Yeshua Ben? Mishteh Shosim L'Pidyon Ben HaBachor. Right, that's the Mishteh for Pidyon HaBachor. Yeshua comes from the word Purkan, to redeem. Right, the redemption. Tosfos rejects that. He says, "Did you have a ben?" Maruch says that. Bekashi says that's not the case. Rabbeinu Taram Perish Shnola Sham Ben. Hashem Shavlad Nusha V'Nimlat Mineimo. Celebrate the fact that there's a birth of a child that was freed from his mother's womb, was let out of his mother's womb, thereby revealing Lato Tzuda, and they made a Tzuda. That, I would have said, possibly, is a Shalom Tzuk. I was going to say over, I think that maybe you could interpret this based on Tosfos, this was the Shalom Tzuk, right? They had a celebration, the first Sabbath, when the child was let out of his mother's womb. Right? So we had the Shabbos, that was the celebration. Either way, they went to some sort of Mishteh. Marsha says, don't mean Dayek here. That when it says Shavua ben means the brit itself, whereas Yeshua ben means the mishteh that you do for the pidyon haben. Right, so what you could interpret as that there's a mitzvah to mishteh by pidyon haben and not by a brit milah, or vice versa. He says don't make that interpretation. He says that Shavua ben we know means the brit itself and not the mishteh surrounding it. With Yeshua ben, right? We interpret it as being the mishteh. The Rav loyal commanded Shmuel. Rav refused to go in front of Shmuel. Shmuel lo ayel kamei de Rav Asi. Shmuel refused to go in front of Rav Asi. Rav Asi lo ayel kamei de Rav, and Rav Asi refused to go in front of Rav. There's the three of them there, right? And each won't go in. Shmuel won't go in front of Rav Asi because he was a greater talmid chacham than him. Rav Asi wouldn't go in front of Rav because he was his rebbe. Rav Asi was a talmid of Rav, and Rav wouldn't go in front of Shmuel because Shmuel. We'll see in a second that Rav held Shmuel in high esteem. We'll see why in a second. Imri man nitrach. Who should be bothered to stay back? As long as one of them stays back, then we won't have a problem. Like, for instance, if Shmuel stays back, then if Rav asks Rav, it's clear that Rav goes in first, right? So who are we going to leave behind so that we can allow all people to go in? So Nitach Shmuel, we'll leave Shmuel back. When Nitach Rav Rav Asi, then Rav and Asi will go in, right? And then Rav will be the first one to go in, and it'll be Rav Asi's coming after. But it says, Nitrach Rav. Why don't we leave back Rav or Rav Asi? Leave one of them back. Why are we leaving Shmuel back? So, because Rav milked ba'amahu David laid the Shmuel. That Rav really wasn't giving kavod out of Shmuel because he deserved that kavod. In that he wasn't entitled to that kavod. It wasn't that Rav saying, I won't come from Shmuel. Ella, Yishim Dayam Mahavu Matzit Dalatya. The problem is a case, famous case, that Rav had cursed Shmuel. And because he cursed Shmuel, he felt really bad about it. And therefore, Rav, his whole life, gave him kavod. A special level of kavod, Yossi Slim speaks first, gave him a special kavod because he felt bad about that. The case where he cursed him is the case where Rav came to Bavel, and he had a stomach ailment, something was wrong, he wasn't doing well. So Shmuel went ahead and fed him some foods, or some medicinal items. Shmuel was a rofeh, right, he was a sukbe refuah. Gave him something that would make him go to the bathroom, but he refused to let him go to the bathroom. He didn't show him where the bathroom was. He didn't give him an opportunity to go to the bathroom. So Rav went crazy. This guy's feeding me this stuff, not letting me go to the bathroom. And so he cursed Shmuel. And truth was that Shmuel said that was the refuah that Shmuel was performing on him. This was the thing, this type of medicinal solution was that if you eat this stuff and then don't go to the bathroom for a certain amount of time, but that would solve his stomach ailment. So Shmuel met the Tovah, but Rav had cursed him already. And because of that, I think because of Rav's curse, Shmuel did not have children. And so Rav felt very bad about this curse, because Shmuel had meant his l'tova. So he always gave him kavod. Because the rest of his life, because of this circumstance, or this issue that had happened, he gave Shmuel kavod. Therefore, they left Shmuel behind, because the kavod he was giving him wasn't the quote-unquote real kavod. So he was the one they left behind in order to hit Rav and Rav Ashi going first.
Excuse me, it says that the curse was that whoever was supposed to get this kavod would not be survived by sons.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's
it. So, Dabre Ravale. Right. So, the Rav went in first. Right. Adahaki. They were all there now. Adahaki v'ochi after Shuna. While they were there partying, right, the baby was in the back room, and a Shuna cat came along and kate liyazid the yinoka. It cut off or bit off the arm of the baby. Nazak Rav Darash, Rav Manaud and Mutoresh, Khatul Mutar the Hurgo. Can kill a cat. Basur the Kaimo, you're not allowed to keep them, you're not allowed to bring up cats. Bainbo Mishum Gezel, it's not stealing. What it means that it's not Mishum stealing, right? Bain, we'll see in a second. Bainbo Mishum Hasheva Vedala Balim. You don't have to return it to the owners. Where it says, the game is Amar the Mutar the Hurgo, right? My needle to Asur the Kaimo. If it's Mutar to kill it, what do you mean? You can't, obviously, you can't keep it around if it's mutter to kill it. Ma'od the same mutter l'argo. Right, so that's the same amutalargo that you're allowed to kill it. Sura leka, but there's no issue to keep it around. Just someone kills it, and it's not a problem. Kamash malan, that not only is there a amutalargo, but it's also nisura to keep around the cat. Imri v'gemin d'amart imbo mishum gezel. You said there's no problem with gezel. Mind you, too, imbo mishum hashavei d'al balim. What are you going to return to the balim? You're allowed to steal it, and you're allowed to kill it. Right? What type of hashavei is there? He says amaravina l'oro for its skin. You don't have to return the dead cat to its owner. You can leave the cat, or you can take it. There's no issue of returning it to its original owner. Now, Tosus points out over here that when nafak rav v'darash is not that. That's when he was metaking it. That the tekana already existed. Right, Ella, but he said that he went out and he publicized again, or he went in and said that I had made this takana already, that cat, about cats, and then he was publicizing it. Not that the takana was made on the spot from this instance over here. Now, the also, what exactly the problem of Gizel? It also talks over here, brings the Gemara from Sanhedrin that we spoke about, and also we had spoken about earlier. That case that a person can bring up these an ari, an amer, a dove, a zev, a barbalus, a nachash. You're allowed to bring up these types of animals. So if you're allowed to bring up these types of animals, right, what's the difference here between a cat and these animals? Why here can you kill a cat, you can't bring up a cat, and these, which seem to be much wilder animals, you're allowed to bring up. So Tosus gives...
They also have a good purpose.
Right. That they have a positive.
Yeah.
Who? The cat? Or the...
No, the other thing we saw is
right, Shunra, because they're not carried the bite. Right, they have a positive aspect to them. So, right, Tosfos here says one possibility is that because Hainu Kshurim Mishal Shelet, Kshen Kerach LeDakran, Machal Rabatul Shen Kshura. Here, talking about a cat that's not on a leash, or the animals that we're talking about in that instance that you're about to bring up are animals that are on a leash. The key difference would be doing the animals on a leash or not on a leash. That's one possibility. He says that other possibilities, Mahanu Regilim Bnei Adam LeZaher. By the other animals, people have a natural tendency to distance themselves from those animals because they know that they are dangerous or feel danger by them. Cats are, you know, in some way friendly types of animals, and people let their guard down. And that was the problem by cats, is that because of that, there's a headache that comes about because people let their guard down when it comes to cats. Those are the two possibilities that Tosfos give in terms of the problem here. So now, Meitavei, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Omer, Megadlin, Klavim, Kofrin, Bechatulim, Bekuvim, Becholdot, Naim, Beneshasim, and Akira Tabayit. Right? This is what you were quoting, David. That they had the brace on the previous Alma that says you can bring up cats in your house. Because they clean up the mice that are in the house. And what part of why, right, the original reason why cats ended up in Eretz Yisrael was for the rats and the mice to get rid of them. Right? So therefore, that's why you don't see a lot of mice and rats, but we see a lot of cats. Right? So, Lokasha. Haba Uchma, Chavachiura. The difference is between whether it's a black cat or a white cat. So it seems from now that the white cat is the problem, the black cat is okay. Rama says, wait a minute, Rav's cat was a black cat. So how can you say that that's the difference? Rama says, Hatam Uchma Bar Chiyuro. It was a black cat that was a son of a white cat. So it's a black cat, son of a white cat, didn't Ravina ask the question, why Ravina Uchma Bar Chiyuro Mahu? What's the din of a black cat that's the child of a white cat? That's the third generation, right? Meaning that if it was a black cat, the son of a white cat, the son of a black cat, he was already two generations of white, and now the third generation turned out to be black. That's a problematic cat. So now that's it. So now, Tosu says, by the way, that's one of the reasons Tosu says, before we said the answer, that people don't know how to be careful about cats. It's one of the reasons they don't know how to be careful about cats, because you have a black cat, you don't know its lineage. You don't know its lineage, you don't know if it's a good black cat or if it's a dangerous black cat, because here we have a black cat, the son of a white cat, therefore we just say blanket, just, you know, make sure we distance ourselves and get rid of these cats, because we just don't know to differentiate between the good black cats and the bad black cats. Alright. Amar Rabbi Yaakov bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Ava bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Ada bar Papa, Rami Lama Rav Ava bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Chir bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Yaakov bar Papa, Rim Lam Rabbi Ava bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Acha bar Papa, Mishum Rabbi Chanina bar Papa.
Are you
right now, to see him right here. That's all the, whatever these brothers, whoever said it in whose name and in name of who and from whom, right? Matri'im ala chichuch b'Shabbat. We are Matri'im. Rashi says here, Matri'im is in b'tzibur. We make announcements of b'china, we have tefillah, u'b'shofarot, u'b'chatzotzrot. You blow the shofarot, u'chatzotzrot on Shabbat. Right? He says, Alachichuch v'Shabbat. But the chichuch over here is, Gemara's going to say in his second, or he's going to say it's shchin. Right? It's a problem of shchin. Shchin is some sort of boils, blisters, something that's a human, what seems to be a contagious type of plague that affects the humans in the place. So that you can be matrin al chichuch b'shabbat. V'delet hanin elet lo b'mehirat yifatach. Right, a door that is closed will not easily be opened. The Gemara will ask the second question. A very famous story there, that a person who is buys a bite in Eretz Yisrael can write the contract on it on Shabbos. Again, the Gemara will talk about this in a second. So now, this matrina al kichu b'Shabbos is a question about what it means. Rashi says clearly that matrin means that you could blow shofarot chatzotz like a normal fast day that you would have. Otherwise, you can do it on Shabbos itself because of the danger and the need for tefillah. Tosu says straight out, Korchach lav ainu atra b'shofar. Says, what? He says, there's no shofar. Because shofar b'shabbat mi'ika. We never blow shofar on Shabbos. That's not, even when you put together tanis, we have some sort of danger that comes. Only if it's sakanas nefashot, in the sense, right, that you blow the shofar. He says, but we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos. El atra b'peh. What we're talking about, atra here means b'peh. What does atra b'peh mean? B'aneinu. Shabbat means that they scream tefillah. They did tefillah tanenu. They do things that are not normally allowed on Shabbos. They do on Shabbos. So we're about their ma'atam, anenu kari le'atra. And he holds like the mandomer in Tanis that says atra is not shofarot, but rather anenu.
Well,
there is, first of all, there is another mandomer that atra does not mean shofar. And, so he says, also over here, according to the mandomer, that's what Tosfos has to deal with in the end. So that's what he says, if on Shabbos we're willing to override Shabbos with Aneinu, then certainly on Chol, it's grave enough a situation that you would blow the shofar. That's how Tosfos interprets it, that the shofar is not necessarily on Shabbos. Right, and if that you say that, maybe that could be the interpretation of Rashi. Also, Rashi never mentioned Shabbos here; he just mentioned that they blow the shofar like a regular tanit. So, matrin al chuch, right, is in general because on Shabbos we violate it because of the anenu. Right now,
Rashi is saying that when you have such occasions like that, there's
the possibility that Rashi means because of the sleep, but it's a kanat nefesh that we allow even a shofar on Shabbat. But the shofar is not. See, the problem with that is that the shofar is not for the warning. Part of the Kuf Nevi, the shofar here is to be mitzorer the people, the tefillah, and the rachamim. So that's as a tool of tzaka. What Tosfos mentions here is that if shofar is part of the tzaka, part of the tefillah, right, then we know that even on Rosh Hashanah, where shofar is an integral part of tefillah and tzaka, so we say that Shabbos overrides. So here, at a tanis, who's going to allow a shofar in Makom Tanis if we don't allow a shofar in Makom Rosh Hashanah, where it's the door, right? And it's part of the tefillah, Tayyum. Eitveh, v'shar pruniyot ha-mitrak shot v'ot al ha-tzibur. Any other pruniyot that come on the tzibur, go on chichuch, what is like this locust, chagav, right? The grasshoppers, chichuch is shchin, chagav is locust, zvub, tzir'ah, bitush, and all these different types of flies and wasps and mosquitoes, b'shiluach nechashim, or snakes, infestations of snakes, rakovim and scorpions. Lo yometriim, also koakim. They're not matria, but they're rather soek. Right. So now that creates somewhat of a problem, but also the interpretation that's probably what forced Rashi the other way is if matriim is anenu, then what is soakim? Right. We're not matria, we just soek. So what is soek in terms? According to Rashi, when matriim means that you blow the shofar, then soakim is anenu. The Gemara says they have yichuch here and you have yichuch above. Means the yichuch is found in both places. Shkin is found in both places. Says lo kash kam belach kam be yavish. That type of shkin that you're getting over here. It's hard on the inside, it's dried out on the inside, and moist on the outside. It was shchin. Ababuot poreach v'adam. Ababuot was bubbling, meaning it was moist on the outside. Poreach above v'adam u'bameyama. That is the idea when it's dry on the inside and wet or moist on the outside. That doesn't go away fast. That's something that you really need to daven for. You have to be matrin on. Whereas if it was just lach, it was just moist, then that's something that's a passing problem, or more of a passing problem, and you don't need to be matri on Shabbos. V'delet anin elet lo b'meirat yipatach, mayat, mayit, what is that? So, Amar Sutra, Amar Smicha, you don't get smicha, I mean, if you have the opportunity to get smicha, not like today, if maybe it's today too, have the opportunity to get smicha, right, then if you don't get it back then, smicha was involved with, you had to have learned from a person that was a musmach, and it'd be masmich, right, so that was a point that we had problems. There were many major problems the Romans tried to crack down, right, on the smicha process. But here, if you didn't get a smicha, you didn't get it, then he won't get it. It's funny that the author of that statement is Marzutra, was obviously someone who did not have smicha. Now, Ravashi Amar, Kolomirin Lo, Lobi Meira, Metibin Lo. Now, something that goes bad for someone doesn't get good again for them very fast. Right? So, Rav Acha, Mizipti Amar, the Olam, Emetibin Lo. Never gets better for them. Right? Below he, that's not the case, because Rav Acha, Mizipti, Milsa, the Nafshe, Hu, the Amar. He was reflecting his personal experience, because he was appointed to be the Rosh Yeshiva, or he was going to be appointed, he was supposed to be appointed to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and never worked out, he never became the Rosh Yeshiva. So he says, when things don't work out, they don't work out with Gamre. And I says, no, that's not true, that was his personal experience, but in general, when things get bad, right, then they don't easily get better. Rashi says, lo bimera tibadach, Rashi says, nafkamina lafushe berachme. Right, the question about whether you, how much tefillah you need, right, how much tefillah, do you really, is it worthwhile to place so much tefillah in here if they don't? It's not going to happen anyway, right? Maybe your effort should be placed somewhere else. But in the end, we do say that tefillah always helps. Marshall makes down a possibility here that the idea of over here that anidel lo meheri tipatach is talking about a person who chases something like kavod. In that, in general, the minhag chachamim run away from kavod, and that's why they're given the opportunity to. Right, become they get because godolim because they don't want that kavod, they're not interested in that kavod. So that's someone who if it's closed because the person wants it to be right, he's chasing after the kavod, and that's why the delos is closed on him. It won't easily be opened. Right, it's not going to be the idea that kol adochen katashash at the kokol. But the idea that you don't run after these types of things, they come when they come because they're not open these doors. Once you chase, you know, when you chase it, they won't open easily for you. Alright. You can write a contract even on Shabbos. Shabbos talks about on Shabbos you think. Why? Because how can you violate Shabbos? The din do right, so you don't violate Shabbos even for a mitzvah to Israel. In fact, the Gemara even had a hafamina that the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, you can violate a doraisa on Shabbos, it's amazing hafamina. Gemara concludes, okay, it's not a doraisa, it was damar rabba hotam, omer l'nachri v'oteh, achanami omer l'nachri v'oteh. It's a merely akum. You'll have to violate a merely akum in order to, right, in order to establish on Shabbos, in order to establish a footprint or Yishuv Eretz Yisrael to buy a property from a nachri in Eretz Yisrael. So now, if afagav the merely akri shivuti, right, even though Amir Lakum is a Shavuot, is a Dinder Rabbanon, Mishum Eri Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Gazru Bei Rabbanon. In the face of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanon were not Gozer in this instance. Now, the Gemara says, okay, Amar Rav Yishmol, Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Yochanan, Olkei Achir, Eretz Yisrael, person who buys a city, or establishes a city in Eretz Yisrael, Kufin Oto Likachva Derech Me'arbaru Chutel. We force him to open it up from all four sides, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, to encourage people to come, to settle there, to live there. And so because of Eretz Yisrael, we force him to put in the proper infrastructure in order that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael should be easy. Right? That's, this is what Gemara should be up on the mayor's office in Beit Shemesh. Right? That you have to put in the proper infrastructure before you encourage the people encouraged to come here and that they should have an easy plita in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's important to us over here. He says that Omer ben Achri Boseh, if you look down and tell us Omer ben Achri Boseh, he says, Dafka, Mishum Mitzvah Zud Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Right, so first of all, you could interpret from this Gemara, that when it comes to any important mitzvah, we allow you to violate a Shavuot, like you violate a Din Derabbanan. So Omer ben Achri Boseh says, no, this is unique and specific to Mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The only time we allow you to violate a Mir Le'akum is for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, it tells you the importance of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But number two, there's only a dispensation for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It says, Aval l'torach mitzvah acheret lo shari amir l'inachri, v'afilu l'torach mila mashma. Sounds like even for a mila, you're not allowed to have a mila akum when it comes to a mila. There's lo shari amir l'inachri b'yisurim d'oraisa. A mila akum is not allowed when it comes to isurim d'oraisa. And that is applied to even by a mila. So what Tosus is saying over here, what Tosus is the first explanation of Tosus, is that the Amir La'akum here is allowed, you're allowed to tell a Nachri to do a Isur Deoraita, to write for you on and to sign the contract for you on Shabbos, only for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And even though in other situations you say Amir Lachim is mutter by Bris Mila, only that this interpretation though says that it's only by Dinei Derabbanan. You can do a Shvut to Shvut, you can do Amir Lachim to violate a Dinei Derabbanan for Bris Mila, but you may not do Amir Lachim to violate a Dinei Derabbanan to perform a Bris Mila, even though it's a Dinei
Derabbanan.
The Tosa says, exactly your point, the Gemara says, well, it doesn't say when you bring a Derek Tarpivio, bring it through Derek Derabbanan, we don't necessarily let you violate it. That even mitzvah derabanan, that's only unique to mila. You know, there's two mitzvah that have a unique situation. There's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael where mila akum is permitted even for daraisa, and for mila where mila akum is only allowed for derabanan, but they're unique to those two mitzvah. Not you can't expand it beyond that. The dafka mila dehi gufa dochi shabbos shari. Only by mila, which in itself violates the Shabbos, then there we have dispensation to use a mila akum to violate the rabbanon. Right? Ayidei nachri yisru the rabbanon. Umiyu says, but the problem is, balochus golos mashma dafilu yisru the raisa shari ayidei nachri l'sorach mila. The balochus golos passes against the reed. Right? My balochus golos says that even by mitzvah the raisa, by mila, you're allowed to have a mila akum in order to do it. He says, because of that, he has to reinterpret some of the Gemara's in Shabbos. Why, you know, what was the case in Shabbos about when they asked the question, they didn't allow him, like you said, in a number of cases, they didn't say, bring a mila akum, use that as a solution. So the Gemara, he changes the whole cases to be cases after the mila, and not before the mila. So that's to reinterpret those cases over there. He says, Lufi alachos gololot, and I conclude this important thing, Tvei itlan the mishra yadei nachri yisru the raisa, me yisru the rabbana na yadei Yisrael. So quite alachos gololot, he says, better to allow a goy, a mila akum, to violate an Yisrael Doraisa, and then allow a Jew to violate an Yisrael Dorabonon. So if you're waiting, should a Jew do it and violate an Yisrael Dorabonon, or should we do a Mir LaAkum and let him violate a Din Doraisa? Both of them are violations of Din Dorabon, right? There's a Mir LaAkum, and so the Lachos Golo says straight out, better to allow an Achri to violate a Yisrael Doraisa for you in a Mir LaAkum than rather have Yisrael do it a Yidei Dorabonon. That's what he says straight out here, the Lachos Golo. He says, "Vayan Hiram Tov Halachos Gedolot." So he says, because of Halachos it seems, "Vatir B'Yom Sheni," that on Yom Tov Sheni shall Goliu, right? Afilu shall Rosh Hashanah Lasuf Kol Tzarchei Mila, Afilu Lichrot Etsim Lasuf Perdo Yedei Yisrael. A Jew can do everything. He says, because of Halachos Gedolot, that you should be able to do anything. Shari Meis Lo Shari Lichbora Yedei Nachri. Right over there, we know that a Nachri is not allowed to. We know the din is that by Nachrim you're not allowed to have non-Jews bury a mate, and therefore, in the time of the Gemara, they used to bury the Meitim on the second day of Yom Tov. Again, the second day of Yom Tov, they used to bury the Meitim because they didn't have refrigeration, they weren't able to keep the body, and so therefore they buried the Meitim right on the second day of Yom Tov. So now, here, Meit, which is not, right, Dokhe, right, Meit itself, which is not Dokhe, any Derabbanan or any Doraisa, nevertheless, we'll let you, Jews, bury it on Yom Tov Sheni, and certainly Mila, right, which is not a, right, Mila, which is Dokha, Shabbos, and is Dokha Yom Tov, certainly there we're going to allow Yisrael to violate it. That's the Kavu Chomer of the Halakha of Gedolot. So that's what I recommend there. Yom Tov Sheni Tazku by Yisrael, Philip Yom Tov Sheni Shal Rosh Hashanah, Koshke Mila, the Shari Yedei Nachri, Yisrael, the Raisa, the Shabbos, compared to Shal Rosh Hashanah, the Shari Nami Yedei Yisrael, but Yom Tov Sheni Shal Rosh Hashanah, certainly be viral. So it says it's not a good Kavu Chomer. Why? Why is it not a good Kavu Chomer? Point out here that bearing of the Meitah Yedei Nachri is what prevents us from bearing on Shabbos. Because that would be a busha, or a lack of kavod, a mace, to have a mace be buried on the day of Yisurei Shabbos. Therefore, we wait until after Shabbos. And by Yom Tov Sheni, we have a dispensation because it's only a Yisurei Derabbanan. And again, that's unique to mace. Unique to mace that if they can there, you can violate, right? Yisurei, even in Yisrael, can violate the Yisurei Derabbanan to do it. From there, you may not necessarily draw a conclusion that
just because you are mutar to violate the second day of Yom Tov Mimeis, of course, because of Bizayon, that we don't want to leave the mace around, that doesn't necessarily mean that you also, by Mila, would be allowed to violate either the second day of Yom Tov or the second day of Rosh Hashanah, because there is no Kal V'Chomer. Both mace is mutar on Shabbos, Meikar at dinner, and the only reason we don't bury a mace on Shabbos is so that it shouldn't be a busha to the mace that someone performs an Easter on Shabbos in order to bury them. But otherwise, Meikar at dinner, he would be mutar on Shabbos. And Mila is mutar on Shabbos, so you can't draw any Kal V'Chomer to say that certainly Mila will be mutar on Yom Tov Sheni, had it been that Mace was Osir on Shabbos. and Mila was mutar on Shabbos, then you would have a Kal V'chomer, because if Meit, which is Asur on Shabbos, is mutar on Yom Tov Sheni, and Yom Tov Sheni Shel Hashana, then certainly Mila, which is mutar on Shabbos, should be mutar on Yom Tov Sheni, Ayidei Yisrael, and on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Rosh Hashana. But the fact that now Meis is mutar b'Shabbos, and is mutar on the second day of Yom Tov, or second day of Rosh Hashanah, now we have no more Kal V'chomer. And this might be a position that's unique to Meis, because of the Bizeona Meis, that we don't allow the body to lie around, and therefore it doesn't give you any conclusion or any right for Yisrael to go and violate Yom Tov Sheni, or Yom Tov Sheni Shel Rosh Hashanah, in order to perform a Mila.
Right, we have 2 minutes, we'll just maybe go up to the 2 days, because tomorrow's a very, very long daf. Tamar Bana, Atarat Naim Itna Yoshua. There are 10 takanot, or principles, that Yeshua established, social contracts, when they came to Eretz Yisrael. Gemara later on says, I think that that's any Jewish settlement in general. And then one is Shein Me'arin B'choshin, that you're allowed to graze your animals in the forest. That's what we saw before. That Rabbi Gamliel, when he's talking about his family, he says that they went to the forest. The Gemara says, what's the problem? And Rabbi Shimon, sorry, went to the forest. It wasn't a problem. The problem is that they were cutting through the field. Because grazing in the forest is one of the takanot of Yeshua. You're allowed to pick up a firewood or a kindling anywhere, these little sticks that are like considered to be hefker anywhere along, and you can pick up weeds and grass anywhere that it's growing in fields that are otherwise planted for tvua or for other items. You can pick them up because it helps the other items that are growing there, therefore it's like hefker and you can take it, right? Except for platan, which Rashi says it helps. It helps the platan in that sense, so there if you take it out, you're actually hurting it. Because you're allowed to, according to Rashi, you're talking about it in Baba Batra, that if you want to take, cut down olive trees, and you want to take them for wood, that you have to leave a certain amount over. Rashi says, gufiot are from the word derech, which is your fistful. You have to leave 2 fistfuls worth of olives on the tree, allow the tree to grow back. Meaning that you can cut wood down to the point where the tree still has the ability to regenerate itself and to grow back. That's the amount of wood you can take. Tosus disagrees over here and says no. He brings down the Oroch's interpretation that the Gufim is Anafim, right? That the Anfei Zayit means the branches of the Zayit. That Gufiyotu Zayit means you can take a certain amount of branches of the Zayit, whereas Rashi is talking about the actual Zaytim themselves. And Tosus says that the Gufiyotu Zayit is the same thing the way we say by different, each different type of tree has its name for its shoots. Right? You have the Yuchurei Teinim. You have Zmurot, right, for grapes, and you have Gufiot, for Zaytin. So Gufiot is the sprouts or the branches of a diet tree. If a spring comes out to start with, I mean, starts coming out, then it belongs to everybody in the city. I mean, even though it comes out in private property, a spring that comes out is allowed to be used by everyone in the city, or is a supply for the whole city. You can't just claim, because it's in my property, it's my spring. Right, and even though in other places we see that you're allowed to keep a private spring. So he says, the question is, there's a mechalik between if it comes out by itself or whether you dug it. And if you dug it or you made it possible if there's a spring here, then that you can keep privately. Whereas if it just starts shooting out, all of a sudden there's water starts to flow out and there's a new spring here, then that belongs to the entire city and not to you privately. I mean, you can't keep a private water source. You're allowed to fish in the Kinneret. You're allowed to fish in the Kinneret, even though it belongs to Shevet Naphtali. Everybody has permission. If the public area is considered to be hefker, and you're allowed to go fish in the Kinneret, as long as you don't put up these traps that they used to put up with fences in the water, because that then hurts the boats. The boats can't get through when you place these fences in to trap the animals. You're going to use these nets that don't affect the boats. The Nifne Nachreya Geder, Afilu B'stei Nalem Karkum. You're allowed to go to the bathroom, you're allowed to defecate in anyone's field, meaning that you're allowed to go behind the fence into their field, even to a field of karkum, right, which is a very expensive item, saffron, right, which is very expensive even for small amounts of it, and even though you can go into a field full of saffron to go ahead and defecate, we'll see why or what the issue is. In general, people give permission to people to cross through their fields during the summertime. After they've harvested the fields, before they plant the new season, you're allowed to use their fields as shortcuts. Because people in general are makpir their area, they're not makpid that people walk through there because there's nothing growing there, there's no issue. So that's up until the Rivia Shniyah, until the second rainfall, because once you hit the second rainfall, people are ready to start to plant, and then they will not allow people to cross through their fields. You're allowed to go over to the sides of the public thoroughfares. Public thoroughfares during the winter season, when it's all muddy, right? Then they become, there's ups and downs and grooves that come up. What happens when the mud hardens? Right, you know that here from Eretz Yisrael, from Beit Shemesh. When you have mud during the rainy season, it got impacted or changed. Then when it gets hard, it forms with these bumps and all these types of crevices in it, and it makes it very difficult to travel on that area. So because of that difficulty of travel, you're allowed to move to the side, over to somewhat private property on the side, just to circumvent these problems. Batoim ben bakramim mafsig v'olem mafsig v'yored. Person's locked inside of a karen, inside of a vineyard, is allowed to break off branches so that he can see where he's going, or clear a way through so that he can get out. Umeit mitzvah konem mekomo. Last one of, is that any made mitzvah, wherever he dies, he's konem mekomo, he gets that place and you bury him on the spot. Right, right there. Wherever he dies, we give him his koneh makom, and we bury him on the spot. Right, we'll come back tomorrow and we'll interpret each one of these takanot of Yeshua.